tree that never had to fight for sun and sky and air and light, but stood out in the open plain and always got its share of rain. Never became a forest king, but lived and died a scrubby thing. The man who never had to toil to gain and farm his patch of soil, who never had to win his share of sun and sky and light and air, never became a manly man, but lived and died as he began. Good timber does not grow with ease. The stronger wind, the stronger trees. The further sky, the greater length. The more the storm, the more the strength. By sun and cold, by rain and snow, in trees and men, good timbers grow.
Hello guys, this is Clint Locklear from Trapping Radio, and I had a gentleman call me and was asking me questions about how to start up an ADC business. And, you know, when I got that type call, I don't know, I probably got 15 hours of that on my business course. And this isn't a pitch for the business course, but it's one of those things, it's such an open-ended subject. It's kind of like, how do you rebuild a motor in 30 seconds? Go. Could you imagine, even if you were an expert at rebuilding a 350 Chevrolet motor, you had to take it apart, get it clean, get new bearings, get the gaskets, put the crank back together, get everything sealed back up, get the timing right, all that. And you know, in a normal conversation, maybe not 30 seconds, maybe 5 minutes. Could you explain how to rebuild a motor in 5 minutes? No. So when I get these questions like this, and I know why people call, they're looking for answers. And I respect that, because if you're looking for information, you're looking for answers. And when we're not sure about something, that's what we do. And there's nothing wrong with that whatsoever. But general questions normally get general answers, and general answers normally don't help you very specifically. So I want to talk a little bit about starting an ADC business. Before we do, I want to thank our sponsors at Sport Trapping Radio. We have F&T Fur Harvesters out of Michigan. They have everything you need for trapping, hunting with hounds, and predator calling. They're going to have a store open. If you're a trapper and you're within, you know, probably a day's drive of there, you'll want to go check that out this fall. Not only can you pick up orders, you can put your hands on stuff, and like everything else F&T does, it's going to be first class. Next sponsor is Funky Trap Tags and Supplies with Alan Sayers. Just a good guy. He's got a full line of trapping supplies. He really goes out of his way to take care of customers. He's got a great employee, which I call Little Alan, just because they're both named Alan. That's the only way I can separate them on my phone. But he's the guy that ships the stuff out. He's the guy that ships my stuff out physically. And those two together do an outstanding job with customer service. So if you're looking for anything you'd want in trapping, snaring, lures, baits, deer hunting, fishing, Funky Trap Tags and Supplies is someone you would definitely want to check out. Next, we have Oki Cable and Trap out of Oklahoma, full line of trapping supplies. Sometimes buys meat, sells meat, sometimes buys fur, sells glands. Oki's just one of them cool dudes that comes up with cool stuff that you want to stay in contact with, because you may not even realize some of the options out there that you talk to Oki. And then we have Dunlap Lures. Jeff Dunlap, a good friend of mine. I just feel like a reporter, I should say that. We both make lures. And this is a weird one. A lot of people ask me, don't you feel weird about supporting Jeff? No, not at all. We just because we're friends and we sell lure and baits, I've never considered Jeff competition, and I don't think Jeff has ever considered me competition, which is what good, healthy businesses do. And the reason I don't ever have to worry about Jeff is because he's not going to do something that I would have to be ashamed of as a friend or as another business owner. And he makes very good product. He makes very good bait and lures. And he works his butt off to make sure it stays that way. So somebody like that I can respect. And that's the reason I don't mind saying that he makes good bait and lures, even though I also make them. So that should tell you a lot if you're looking for some bait and lures. That's Dunlap Lures. That little poem that I played at the beginning, you might want to go back and listen to that again, guys, if you're thinking of starting an ADC business. Now, from here on out, I'm not referring to the gentleman that called me at all. So if you're listening to this, I'm no longer referring to you whatsoever. This is just, and this is all off the top of my head. I have no notes for this show. I was out doing my morning walk. I was thinking what I needed to do the show on. This popped in my head. I started thinking about it. So this is where we're going to go. First off, a ADC business is no different than someone that cuts grass. It is no different than someone that details cars, trims trees, is a carpenter, does home repairs or builds homes, builds boat docks, works on boats, sells groceries. It makes no difference. One of the biggest things that I've noticed with guys that want to start an ADC business of some type, well, there's many things that I've noticed that we're going to cover off and on here in the next few minutes, is they think the trapping is the most important part of that business. And I'm here to tell you, it is not. Because you don't have to be a good trapper to have a good tree trimming service. And you don't have to be a good tree trimmer to have a good trapping service. What you're doing is actually irrelevant to the customer, except you're meeting a need. That's all it is. How you get that customer, how you keep that customer, how you do your service calls, how you show up on time, how you charge fair rates, all of that is important, way more than your ability to catch a raccoon in somebody's attic. Now, we as trappers focus on the trapping because that's the reason most ADC guys get into trapping is they fall in love with trapping. They want to do it year round. They may have a job that absolutely sucks and they feel like, you know, brushing their teeth with a pistol every morning before they go into work because they just can't stand it. So they hear these stories, and I'm sure some of them are true. Just like there's people on YouTube and Instagram that make millions of dollars a year. Well, there's also a very select few people that make millions of dollars in basketball, but there's a whole lot of people that play basketball. So if you get the outliers out of the equation that may have some really good contacts, they started up really early, all this type stuff. When people hear the prices of most ADC trappers, they go, I'm going to be rich. Now, I'm here to tell you, you can make a good living being an ADC trapper. But don't believe everything you hear from other ADC trappers. Believe it or not, there's a lot of guys that lie about how many coyotes and bobcats and raccoons they catch. I know that's hard to believe. People exaggerate. And why do they exaggerate? Because they want to get status in a certain group. They want to feel good about themselves, and they want other people to look up to them. So people lie like that all the time. In just plain fur trapping. Which makes no sense. You're not even competing with somebody else. It's a totally different thing than business. But people will lie about, I know a guy that for like 12 years, he caught exactly 100 coyotes a year. Never 99, never 101, 102, or 93. It was 100 a year. And he was pretty well known. Now the statistic ability to pull that off is pretty much zero. So how many coyotes was he actually catching? I don't know. I don't care. But it, after a while, it became, oh my gosh, everybody could say it before he did, 100 coyotes. And when you hear ADC from guys that are not in ADC, you hear these outrageous claims about income all the time. Somehow, the trapping industry is not a wealthy industry, because apparently it seems like most ADC guys make somewhere between $500 and $10 million a year if you were to add up what they actually say they make. But nothing about them, nor their lifestyle, nor anything else matches what they say they're making. I hear stuff all the time. I've got 10 or 15 raccoon jobs a day. By the time I do setup and this, that, and the other, I'm making $200 to $300 a raccoon. Well, let's just do some quick figuring here. I got the calculator, you'll probably hear it in the background. You got, say, 15 raccoon jobs a day times 300. It's $4,500 a day. There's 7 days in a week. That's $31,000 a week times four is $126,000 a month times 12 is $1.5 million. Wow. That's kicking ass. That is kicking butt right there. $1.5 million. Do you think there's probably a little bit of exaggeration going on? See, I can go back and look at fur prices from the late 70s and early 80s. And you can look at the average of the prices. But see, no one ever remembers in the fur industry what the average price was on stuff. But they remember that one or two or five outstanding animals they had that somebody really want, and all of a sudden now they're getting $60 a raccoon, $40 a raccoon, $100 a fox, $150 a fox. And they're catching all these animals. And the price of stuff didn't cost that much back then. Now, reality was, that was nowhere close to what they was actually making trapping. But the impression, and I think they believe it over time, is that every time they went out and caught a raccoon, it's $40, $50, $60. Well, let's pull out the calculator. $40 raccoon. Catch 15 a day. That's $600 a day times 7. $4,200 a week times 4. $16,000 a month, say 4 months, $67,000. Do you really think most trappers back in the late 70s and early 80s were making $67,000? That's just raccoons. What would it be with fox? $80,000? High dollar bobcats? Do you know how much money $67,000 was in the late 70s and early 80s? It'd be about equivalent of the devaluation of the dollar today of somewhere around $250,000. Now, I haven't looked this up, and feel free to do this. I could be wrong, $10,000, $15,000, one way or the other. There was a lot of really rich trappers back in the late 70s and 80s. They must have been buying mansions and yachts. Because you could buy farms for $67,000 back then. But when you listen to the professionals talking about it, they had enough to live on, which wasn't a whole lot of money back then. Probably the average income back then was probably $15,000. And they could buy a new truck, which was about $6,000 or $7,000. every time that I hear somebody online talk about their way of doing business, it's always that $50 and $60 raccoon. It's always the outlier of some weird thing that happened in a weird geographical area, and something just hit right, and now they try to convince everybody else that that's the same thing. And they all say they're so busy they're turning down work. My first point I want to make to trappers that are in the fur side, that want to go to the ADC side, is you need to not overinflate, which I had a deer biologist one time use this term, which I've always liked, and I don't know exactly why he said this, but it made sense to me, Chinese math. Because I figured Asians are really good at math. But you don't want to blow this up in your mind so you're so disappointed if the first year or two you make $30,000, $40,000, $25,000, $10,000, whatever it is. You know, like a realistic business starting from scratch. You have no customers. You have no reputation. You have no contacts, really. You're going to have to find every new customer. You're going to have to build those relationships. You're going to have to get repeat customers. You're going to have to get contracts. You're going to have to learn how to do contracts. All of that type stuff is not something that comes very easy. Now, I've got a friend in the north. I haven't talked to him to say whether I should say this or not. He's thinking about selling his share of a very established ADC business. I don't know the exact price that he's looking for. It's probably somewhere around $250,000, $300,000. Most people would look at that and go, that's too much money. That business, he's been in it for 12, 15 years. The boss before that was running it for no telling how long before that. So let's say it's been going for 25 years. There's commercial real estate involved and all kind of stuff. He's just getting at the age where he's getting tired. From a business point of view, unless you're a very entrepreneur type person that is super motivated, and I don't mean like motivated today and you want to sit on the couch tomorrow or you want to dream about it and you think it's going to happen. I'm talking about, you know all of about the business part. You know all about the internet parts. You know all of this other stuff. You're probably better off getting a loan and buying my friend out of that partnership. See, I was talking to a guy, and he was kind of joking around, and I just said a number off the top of my head about selling my lure business. My mind, I added up what I bring home out of the business, what I need to be able to do until I'm 60, because my financial planner basically said you need to do this till you're 60. I'm 53, that's 7 years. And then you should be good to go. So I added that seven up in my head, and I told him, $350,000. You want to buy my business? $350,000. He was dumbfounded. He was like, well, a loan on that would cost this. And I'm like, yeah. And one summer order from a wholesaler pays your whole year's bills, and everything else is pretty much yours. Now see, that would blow somebody away. But the point is, not only would you get all the websites and the books and the DVDs and all the lure formulas and all the stock that I have in and the bottles and all this other stuff, that's really cheap. And here's the reason. What is 30 years of someone's life that built up a reputation to have a good product worth? Not just the dollar amount, which on an REI or ROI, that would be a deal for somebody at $350,000 to buy my business. All the years that I spent 6 and 7 months away from home building a reputation, all of that money that was spent, all of that time away from my wife, all of that education, all of the demos to get people to recognize the name, all of the DVDs, writing and editing the books, the podcast, the YouTube, all of that stuff would be a deal. Or if you're a entrepreneurial type, you could start from scratch, but you need to be realistic. Here's why. If you think you're going to make $100,000 out of the gate, bring home, from an ADC business, because you hear all of these fantastical stories about what ADC people charge and how busy they are and how they turn people away and they're, you know, wiping their butt with $100 bills and all that type stuff, you're going to be highly disappointed. Highly disappointed. What happens when you get highly disappointed? Most people lose a lot of discipline and all motivation. They lose their drive. They start getting down, depressed. They start getting anxiety. It's all because of them, because they believed that if they bought a book that says to buy property and never use your own money and always find these deals where the people are giving you the property at half price and you can turn around and rent them, then you're going to turn around and sell them in 20 years and you're going to die a multi-zillionaire, which there are probably 100 of those books on the market that are bestsellers. When you get in the meat and potatoes of everyday life of that, you realize you've been lied to. And it's just like you take a balloon and you take that little knot out of it and you just watch the air start coming out of it. You get deflated. Or you can be realistic and you go, I'm going to build a customer base. I'm going to keep doing the job that I don't like. I'm going to do this part-time. I'm going to slowly buy equipment. I'm going to be very cautious of expenditures. I'm not going to go out and buy a new truck so I can try to pretend that I'm successful, where I got to make a $900 payment every month. And you build it up slowly over years. And if you look at your business that way, that is very different than the normal businesses of today. Most normal businesses of the day only think about this week, this month, this quarter, this year. When I was doing everything for predator control and lure business and all that stuff, it was 10 years before anybody knew who Clint Locklear was out of Tennessee. I was building a base. Now, the Bible is very clear about one thing. The people that have a lot get more, and the people that lose a lot get less. It doesn't seem fair till you really understand what's going on. If everybody got equal, most people would squander it anyway. But what it's saying is, if you're to continuously going forward and growing, your little steps become much bigger steps, become jumping, become sprinting, becomes getting in a drag car. You can talk to any business owner and they'll pretty much tell you exactly what I'm telling you right now. You survive, just like the little poem at the beginning of the show about how the cold and the wind and fighting for sun, makes a strong tree and something that comes out of the gate, usually with a lot of debt and with a lot of frivolous spending and a lot of frivolous advertising and doing whatever they can at the moment to try to get as much money out of each individual customer, like their throwaway customers, they don't normally have these big leaps and bounds. They stay in that mode pretty much until they give up. And you don't want that to be you. So first off, you need to be realistic about what the ADC business is. Sure, there's people that gets crazy contracts with the government, with airports, with stuff like that. Is that going to be you? I don't know. Another thing that most guys get ADC business with have this concept that I'm not going to tell you is wrong, but I'm telling you, you need to be extremely cautious. You're going to start your ADC business. You're going to work your butt off. When you can't do any more work, you're going to get another truck. You're going to hire somebody. You're going to teach them how to do it. When they get too busy, you're going to repeat, scaling a business. That's what all the colleges talk about. There's a funny thing that happens when you scale businesses this way with high infrastructure costs, which that you got to equip them with all the equipment. You got to equip them with the trucks, the insurance, the workman's comp, their payroll, the vehicles, the tires, all of that. You would think that every time you doubled your production in a business, you would make at least 50% more, but that's not true. It's usually closer to 15 to 30% based on most studies of businesses. But your risk and your outlay get really high because you don't want to work for free and your employee's not going to work for free. So then you get a third employee. Well, now you're up to making, 40% more than you were when you were just by yourself. But now you've got 3x, three times the expenditures per month. And eventually you'll hit a tipping point like Coca-Cola where that makes sense. But it's dangerous. It can be profitable. And I'm not saying you should be nervous and weak and not want to do stuff like this when you're starting a business. But you need to understand what you're getting into. The problem is most people have never run a business. They don't talk to business owners. They don't talk to real entrepreneurs. I'm not talking about social media entrepreneurs. I'm talking about real, everyday, got dirt under their fingernail entrepreneurs. And they grow themselves into bankruptcy. I bet, guys, and I'm not exaggerating, 80% of the people that's talked to me about ADC over the years, over the last 15 years, 80% has gave me that exact same scenario. They want to have trucks so they don't have to work. They let other people work and they bring in all the cash. I mean, that's the American dream, right? That is the American dream. But it's kind of like guys that are professional sports players. A whole lot of people play sports. Very few people actually make money in it. But if that's what, say, 75, 80, 85% of people go into the ADC business and that's their business model or concept, is it any wonder that a lot of guys don't stay in it? Or what I found out over time is most people start out that way. They hire people, they train people. That person gets a case of the red ass one day. They start their own business, even if you get them to sign a non-compete, because that doesn't mean anything in court. And now you've got more competition. You've got to go get somebody else. You train them, they leave. Now you got two times competition, on and on and on and on. So we've talked about business over the years. I don't know how many years I've been doing this show. This is episode 370 or 479. So this is pushing 500 episodes. That's 500 weeks. There's 52 weeks in a year. You can figure that out. Over the years, we've talked about business. From someone that's been self-employed for a long time, I personally don't like the idea of doing big business. I don't like it. Because I've talked to too many people that do big business, and their stress level is insane. You get a couple of slow months, now you're feeding the whole monster with loans. And then when it comes back online, now you got to pay the loans, and you're not making the money because now you got to pay the loans. And it's like this insane monster that just slowly eats the flesh off of your business. I'm not saying you can't do it. And I'm not saying all the professors at Harvard are wrong. But I would be very cautious. So what would I recommend to someone that wanted to go in ADC business? Do it yourself. Do it yourself. That should be your goal until you've got so much business and you're turning down so much money. And I mean so much money. I don't mean like an extra 10 grand. I'm talking hundreds of thousands. You're turning down hundreds of thousands of dollars because you can't physically do it anymore. Then you start looking at the possibility of expanding. That would be my advice. But most people, when I talk to them years down the road, they start off with this thing. They want to get trucks on the road. They want to have all these employees. They want to be the biggest, baddest ADC business in the state or the region or this side of the country. They want to be the IBM or the Coca-Cola or some Fortune 500 of an ADC business, or like Orkin with pesticides. 15 years down the road, they got one truck, they're doing it themselves, and they're way happier. See, I don't know if it's me getting older or me getting smarter or me getting calmer. Success to me is not just what's in that bank. Because with the digital currency and the devaluation of the dollar, I'm not sure what that's really going to mean in the future anyway. It's not looking that good. And all of this money that keeps money going can be shut off pretty quick if everybody else gets scared. That's a fact of life. It's a cycle. It happens to all businesses. But you can control something that keeps your expenses down. You keep your workload reasonable, where you have some time to be a human being. Now, I've talked to a lot of people from the Northeast, and I joke about this all the time, in the Midwest, and they seem to have a lot of Puritan genetics in them. They can't sit still. They've got to work all the time. To me, that's the saddest life of existence that I could think of. Now, from the South, we can work our butt off for 3 weeks straight, 20 hours a day, and not feel one ounce of guilt when we go get in a bass boat and go fishing. A lot of guys from the Northeast and the Midwest and probably the West and even the South, that would drive them insane because they're missing a dollar. They could be making a dollar. What good is it? Well, you can't load your kids up and rent an RV and go out west and spend a couple of weeks and actually be a family. What good is it not to load your wife up on a plane and go see Scotland and Ireland? What good is it if you live in anxiety because you could be missing a dollar? So we don't have that problem in the South. We work really hard and we play just as hard and we relax like it's a profession. Every morning, I'm on my porch, looking at the lake, drinking my coffee, watching the sun come up. Can I make more money if I didn't do that? Yep. That money is not worth it. Now, when you're first getting started, you got to sacrifice a whole lot more than someone that's established. I get that. You've got to do more hours with more drive getting a business off the ground than you do once it's got its own steam a little bit. I get that. But if you don't plan some human time in the middle of all that, is it really worth it? I just want you to keep that in mind. So you need to be realistic. And my advice is, do what you can do. Because if you are making all that money, why are you working 12 months out of the year? Let that sink in. Be a human too. Be a good dad and a good husband. And you going to work and working like a maniac for your whole life. Yeah, you're providing money, but for who? Strangers that you come home and see for a couple hours every night? Okay, we're starting an ADC business. There's a few things that I want to cover just to get your mind going about this, and we're not going to go into great detail. One, you need to know who your customer is. And you need to be very specific about who your customer is. Because if you don't know who your customer is, how do you market to them? Now, we all know every time you get on the phone, smartphone today, it tracks everything you look at, every word you say, even if you're not talking into the phone. We've all been talking to a friend about something. It could be, Never look it up on the phone once and you talk to a friend about a gun you saw at a gun store. Lo and behold, I start getting YouTube videos on that and reviews and stuff like that. I wasn't even talking on the phone. I didn't look at the phone. The phone's listening to you all the time. Every time you type something in, looking up on Amazon, looking at something at YouTube, every time you type who your friends are on Facebook, Instagram, TikTok, it don't matter. It's tracking you. Why is Facebook and Twitter and Instagram and these companies like this worth billions of dollars? Because you like their app? No. Because they can narrow down people's customers for them. That's why they're worth billions of dollars. We give them the information for free. They sell it to businesses. Those businesses can now market to the exact specific target market that they're looking at. But most small business owners that just start can't give anyone a realistic view of who their customer is. The more generic you advertise, the less valuable it is. The less results you're going to get. The more specific you can get, the better your marketing is going to be. I want you just to think about what I just said. How do you market in today's world? You can go pay $2,200 a month for a billboard, and you might as well go flush that down every month. You may get some calls. You'll get more calls like, what? You do this for free? I thought the state paid you. Or you'll get a bunch of antis calling you up and leaving you messages about you being a murderer. Have I ever bought anything besides maybe fast food off of a billboard? I can't think of a time that I have. Maybe if you're driving down the interstate and your wife sees an outlet mall and she wants to stop, okay, they may get some business that way. But something like an ADC business, $2,200 a month, are you going to overcome that $2,200 a month? See, that's a very generic way, and not cheap, mind you, of marketing. It's general and it's to everybody. Very low value. Now let's say you want to trap and make good money and you look around in your area and you do a little bit of research and you talk to the homeowners and go, what is the issue? See, where I live on the lake, since I've been here, I'm loaning out traps to neighbors all the time. I'm good friends with them. I don't care. Do you know what the biggest problem on the lake is? Raccoons getting into bird feeders and suet feeders. And eventually they start tearing the feeders up and the people get mad and they go down to Tractor Supply. They get one of those little green traps. They may catch a raccoon. The second one tears it all to hell and back. And then they come talk to the guy that actually traps. I give them a decent trap. They go catch the raccoon. It's over. This has happened several times since I've been on the lake. Now, interestingly enough, would I try to build a business off of raccoon trapping around this lake? No. Because you know what I'm not hearing a lot about here in the South, here on the lake, is raccoons getting in people's attics. I'm not hearing problems about them being in the house and peeing on the sheetrock and having babies here and there. I haven't heard one single time about that being an issue. It's bird feeders. Anybody can get online and go buy a junkie trap and catch a raccoon. Enough to fix their problem most of the time. I've got neighbors here that catch 20 or 30 raccoons a year. They're not paying for someone to come catch a raccoon. You know what I hear a lot of complaining about? Moles. Now, I'm not a mole trapper. I've been around some very successful mole trappers, but I'm not a mole trapper. I've only set a mole trap a few times in my life. It didn't seem that difficult. So the more specific you get as a new business owner, the more successful your marketing will be, which is how you get customers, and that's how you make money. So if I was going to start an ADC business here on the lake, yeah, I would get a few raccoon jobs and a few beaver jobs, and you know, there's a fox living in my culvert and I'm scared to death it's gonna eat my cat. And you know, you're gonna pick up stuff like that just because people know that you trap, right? That is not what I'm gonna market. What people have a hard time with here on the lake, is, let me turn this down, the moles. Now, the way I look at that, I would probably go, okay, I need to do a lot more studying on moles. I would probably want to go somewhere and even pay someone that's really good at moles to learn all I can about moles. Or for my neighbors, I would use them and tell them this is for, you know, the next 3 months, I'm going to trap your moles for free as an educational thing. After that, we're going to charge. And I don't want you to get mad when that happens because you don't work for free. I'm not going to work for free either. That type thing. I would market myself as the mole man on the lake. Watts Bar Lake. Not as a general ADC guy. I have spent hours studying the internet and reading books, which any of y'all can go order books on SEO and writing content and all the stuff we cover in our business course. You can go read those books, get 10, about half of them will be junk. You'll learn some stuff out of the other five. Now see, there's no other mole trappers on the lake. There's some guys in Knoxville, there's some guys in Chattanooga, there's probably some up in Crossville, there may be a local dude up in Rockwood or something that does generic ADC that's got a couple of mole traps, but nobody is the mole guy. Well, I'm looking around, people are actually having trouble and frustration, and they're scared to death of the medieval looking traps of a mole trap. There's a market here. I can be very specific. I can build up that reputation. And then once I feel like that's kind of planed out, and if I'm not totally full in my business, I will find the next problem that will show itself as I'm at people's houses. Maybe it's squirrels. We got a ton of them. It could be muskrats, which we don't have a lot of, but like my neighbor years ago had muskrats get into her floats on her floating dock, and it's all wampity skew right now. Maybe that's what I concentrate on, but I'm not worried about that right now. Without me even looking, there's a market here for moles, a mole trapper that will be in pretty good demand. On the lake, people spend a lot of money on houses. Most houses have irrigation coming out of the lake. They fertilize their grass. They water their grass. They cut their grass. They aerate their grass. They blow all the leaves off in the winter because someone told them that it's going to kill their grass. They want to have the greenest yard on the lake. I don't know what the infatuation with grass is. It's grass. When I was trying to do a permaculture farm, I couldn't kill it, and these people are worried about it's going to die. But they are having trouble controlling the moles. Now see, I can go and build a website where my SEO, which is search engine optimization, and I hammer home Roane County, because we live in a weird area where there's a bunch of counties come together because of the lake. Roane County, Ray County, Meigs County, 10 Mile, Spring City, Rockwood, Kingston, those are cities. And every time that I do content on this website, which I'm going to do a couple of times a week, it's going to be about moles. It's going to be helpful information. It's going to be biological information. It's going to be the reason they hurt your grass and they cause this problem, and whatever it is that people don't like about moles. They've never bothered me. But I would ask people, why don't you like the moles? I would let them tell me what the problem is, and then I would go figure out ways to do content with it. And then I would do videos, still using SEO, where it's not, I'm not trying to get a single person in Washington State or Texas or New York to find my website. I could care less about someone in New York finding my information about moles, because I'm concentrating on Watts Bar Lake. There's 740 miles of shoreline, which means there's 740 miles of very expensive homes with very expensive yards. I'd probably be the only ADC trapper I know of that would do most of the work off a boat, because I can see the land across the lake from me right now. It takes me 30 minutes to drive there. I can be there in 5 in a boat. To me, that's pretty cool. But anyway, I would do my YouTube videos with SEO specifically for this area. I would put the tags in the metadata, which if you don't know what that is, don't worry about it, you can learn it. Where it's about moles in my area specifically. So anybody on this 740 miles of shoreline that's got a mole problem and starts doing any research, what are they gonna find? When they type in how to get rid of moles in Roe County, Tennessee, I'm there. When they go, how do you trap a mole in Spring City, Tennessee? They're gonna find me. If they're looking up moles for something in 10 Mile, they're gonna find me. I don't care about anybody from New York or Georgia. Very specific. Because are you traveling to New York from Tennessee or from New York to Tennessee? No, you'd lose your butt. Very specific gets you more money. Now, if you're very aggressive, find two problems when you start out and go back and forth between the two. TikTok, I'm not sure about Instagram, but TikTok puts local and regional stuff ahead of the general algorithm, which is how you see what you see. So if anybody's looking up the hashtag Watts Bar Lake, Roan County, Watts Bar, Tennessee River, I can have tags on the videos that I put on YouTube, which now with technology, you can automatically put them to Instagram and TikTok and Twitter. It'll do all that for you. Go find you a 14-year-old. They'll do it for you in 30 seconds. I can put the hashtags in there. And now I'm pounding a very specific area with lots of content on their problem that I can fix. Now, is it more exciting to me to go bobcat trapping? Yes. I'm running a business. I'm not going to make a living bobcat trapping on Watts Bar Lake. If you want to be a professional bobcat trapper, that's a totally different thing. Most guys want to be ADC trappers. Be specific. Narrow your searches on what it is and where it is and using the computer and Facebook and all that stuff so people find you. If I was going to do the mole thing on Watts Bar Lake, I've looked around. There's not a single podcast on Watts Bar Lake. Now, this is where the entrepreneur and the business owner has a hard time with each other because one doesn't understand what the entrepreneur is, and the entrepreneur looks at the business owner like, are you freaking nuts? I'm more of an entrepreneur than I am a business owner. There's no podcast here on Watts Bar Lake. You know what I would do? I would start a podcast for Watts Bar Lake. And if you don't live on a lake, that may not make a lot of sense to you. When you look at what goes on a lake like this, I'm a member of a yacht club. Don't get excited. There's not a single yacht in the yacht club. We got pontoon boats. We're rednecks. As far as I know, there's only two people that have anything bigger than a pontoon boat. I just bought a 38-foot Sea Ray, and there's another lady that's got a 46-foot Sea Ray. That's the closest thing to yachts in our yacht club. But the yacht club does a lot of cool stuff. We go out and we clean up the lake. We have chili cook-offs. We have Christmas parties. We have marina crawls, which are really fun. We have a lock through, so we teach new members how to go through the locks and to go through the dams. Lots of stuff like that. That's one little bitty group. All of the marinas here on the lake are screaming for ways to do advertising besides Facebook. So what I would do, I would start a podcast up about Watts Bar Lake. I talk about the fishing tournaments. I'd find four or five old-time fishermen. I would call them once a week. I'd talk to the guy down at the bait tackle shop about what's hitting and what's not, and what's the water temperature and where to go. I'd talk about what's going on, what band's playing at the marinas, how nice, and have pictures of the sunsets and the sunrises and kids out on the floats, and talk about, you know, having floats up here and there, and what's going on at Sand Island and the new safety rules with the flak jack, life vest. I'd have endless content on this lake. Now, interestingly enough, there's very little information on this lake. But see, I'm a mole trapper. I'm not a lake supporter, wouldn't be the right word. I'm not a lake everything to do fanatic. I'm not saying that right, but I think you get what I'm saying. But if I'm doing the podcast on the lake and it starts getting traction, and every single show, I say, if you're having mole problems, give me a call, and they're hearing me giving them good other information, who do you think they're going to call? Me. If they have a raccoon problem, who do you think they're going to call? Me. Do I have to be worried about the fox? No. Because I can talk about that on the podcast where it's not in a trapper type environment. But look, we're seeing more fox around Watts Bar Lake. Don't be worried about them. They're not wolves. They're not going to start eating your German shepherds. Leave them alone. You know, if you're starting to see a bunch of coyotes, you need to be careful of your small cats and dogs and, you know, stuff like that. Helpful information. With everything I just told you to do, if I desired to, I could have more work than I would ever physically be able to do just around the lake. Now, see, I'm not talking about all of Roane County and Ray County and Meigs County. See how specific I got? So I'm going to end this by breaking this down, because I know that your brain's going to be going, well, how do I do that in my area? Yeah, you're on a special plate. No, 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 no. When I was in the pool business, do you know how I got so many liner jobs once I figured out that it was way more profitable to put in pool liners than it was to build swimming pools? I targeted 6 to 8 of the nicest neighborhoods in Chattanooga. To the point, I would drive around in my truck, thank goodness gas at the time was 80 cents a gallon, and if they had a pool fence or I saw a ladder, I would get their physical address off their house and the road address, because I knew the city and the zip code. And every month I would send them a flyer. Pay postage, send them a flyer. I didn't concentrate on Cleveland, Tennessee and Chattanooga, Tennessee. I concentrated very specifically on the people that are just say, fix it, I don't care what it costs. That's who I concentrated on. What did my competition do? They spent $600 a month in the phone book. They spent $2,200 on billboards. They put ads in the newspaper. I targeted a very specific thing with a very specific service, because pool liners have to be replaced about every 10 years if you're using chlorine. They just get dried out and start cracking and pulling off the corners. See, that's no different than me using Watts Bar. You all know the places where you live that has the money. That's who you target. That should be the pinnacle. Then you start targeting the nice places, but they're not the really super nice places. You target the people with the problems that you can fix. Like moles here. It may be prairie dogs out west. It could be beaver problems in Louisiana. It could be raccoon problems in the Northeast or places that's really cold where they get into people's houses more often. Even if there's 10 ADC businesses in your town of 200,000 people, and you specifically market for, let's say, raccoons being in your house, and you do the videos and the social media, and you write articles on your own websites and all the stuff that you can learn how to do, and you become the guy that's the expert on getting raccoons out of the house because you made it that way, who cares if there's 10 other people? They're coming to you. But see, that is the opposite of the way most ADC businesses try to set up their business. They want to be all things to everybody at all times, which means they mean nothing to anybody, hardly ever. And they wonder why they struggle. I know certain ADC businesses, like my friends that I was telling you about that possibly could be interested in selling this business, their main business is city contracts. That's all they concentrate on. They're not trying to get the neighbor to pay them. They're doing city contracts. That's all they do, for the most part. There's people that concentrate on airports. There's people that do seagull control and geese control. Very specific. So be realistic. Try to grow it organically with the least amount of expenses you can per month. And learn who your customer is. And always remember, the more specific you can get with your customer and their problem in a specific area, the more valuable your marketing will become. And if you're looking to get an ADC business, I would pay attention to this. If you're looking to get into any business, I would pay attention to this. Because it's no different, because it's trapping animals, than it is selling horse feed at a co-op. It is no different. All right, guys, I hope that helped you, and I'll talk to y'all next week.